Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 20. It's Friday night. We're talking about Wednesday night's 2-1 loss to Monterrey. As always, I'm your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. How are you feeling this evening, man?
It's been a bad week for football. So let's just please talk about this game and get it over with and move on to the next one.
Yeah, we're going to try and make this a little bit shorter of a post-game episode, try and keep it to around an hour. I think this one will be interesting because I think you and I maybe have a few disagreements about how that game played out and what it means moving forward. But before we get into the game, let's talk about a few things that have happened over the last 48 hours or even a little bit longer. On Wednesday morning, I believe, Leo Alfonso got officially signed to the roster. And this one confused me because Inter Miami was at 29 players on the 30-man roster. They have no easy mechanism to move a player off the roster. They'd have to trade him or sell him or something like that. And it didn't feel like they had any players that they were trying to do that with. So by signing Leo Alfonso, it felt like they were saying, this is our team. And of course, we've heard for a while now that Matias Rojas, a player for Corinthians, is trying to join the team. That felt like those two moves might be mutually exclusive. Before we talk about today's trade, just want to hear your thoughts on Leo Alfonso.
I think Tata rates him really, really highly. And we spoke about this last podcast as well, where we mentioned that I wouldn't be surprised, given the injuries that we have and the availability on the bench, that Leo Alfonso makes an appearance. And you were right. And even before the podcast, I believe, we knew that he might have a role to play in the game. And then the news came out that he's been signed officially. So I think he's really highly rated by Tata. I'm not sure if he's ready for the big leagues yet. I would have preferred maybe a more experienced option in the front line. And I was all but ready to have Matias Rojas on the roster. But we'll see where that goes now. But hopefully Leo Alfonso can come in and make a difference, given how many injuries we have in that area.
Yeah, there was some scuttlebutt that Matias Rojas and Corinthians maybe were going to try and work out their issue and he might stay with Corinthians. So when I saw that, when I saw Leo Alfonso sign, I just assumed that was probably over until today, where Inter Miami trades 150K in GAM to Montreal for an international roster slot. They didn't need one for any of the guys on the current roster. They were already compliant, which means this roster spot is earmarked for another player, possibly Matias Rojas. So that would mean that one player on the current roster would have to move off. I've heard some rumblings, but probably not from the best sources, that it's possibly a right back, or at least I don't want to put that out there like I'm breaking anything, but we do have three right backs. So that makes sense that we could move one of them off the roster and get something valuable in return. I've long thought that moving Franco Negri was something we might do in the summer window, but I wouldn't be shocked if that happens in the next 2 or 3 weeks before the window closes. We would need to open up another spot to sign another player.
Yeah, but it looks like Chris Henderson's cooking something up. This move came out of the complete blue. So let's see what... It's an international roster spot, and I'm hoping for a big plug-in and a big player coming in. We'll see how that plays out, and there's still time, but hopefully some good news soon.
Yeah, and it does feel like it would be a forward that has a little bit of flexibility, like a Matias Rojas, and I think just because he's the name we've heard for so long, it feels like it could be him. And then I do think that would really put to the test how much Tata really rates Leo Alfonso. We don't have a ton of forward options, especially wide forward options. And in fact, outside of Gressel, Robert Taylor, and Lionel Messi, Leo Alfonso is really it. So if we added another player that was a veteran, that was experienced, that was really good, I would be surprised if he doesn't get a lot of playing time. And by the way, just from everything I know about Matias Rojas, I really do hope we sign him because I think he would be a really good player for us. Benjamin Kramaski played Tuesday night. We talked about it a little bit in the pregame show, but the injury list for tomorrow night's game came out. He's not on it, which means he should be good to go. We're not going to talk too much about tomorrow night's game, but Kramaski healthy. Sergei Kristoff with a hamstring injury. Yannick Bright, who missed the game on Wednesday, also has a hamstring injury. He's going to miss tomorrow night's game as well. So that injury was kind of out of the blue. But other than that, anything else you want to talk about in the world of Inter Miami before we get into this game?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how bad the injury to Yannick Bright is, because we're not going to have David Ruiz available in that next game. And I don't want Gressel playing in the midfield against that Monterrey attack. So big loss. Hopefully he gets back soon. But these injuries just keep coming and disrupting our squad. So hopefully that goes away and we fix things soon.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe if there's a few extra minutes, we'll talk at the end about the next game against Monterrey. But while we're trying to rush through things, let's just jump straight into the lineup. Was there anything about this lineup, now that you have the benefit of hindsight, that you felt like was worth noting and maybe was a problem going in?
Remind me again, what was the circle that you put in the circle our game? What was the area that you'd considered problematic for this lineup? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember mine either. So
we both put Sergio Busquets defending in transition.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We both thought that one.
Correct. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, I think this team could have won that game. I think this team played well enough in that first half and showed that they were well prepared, tactically well prepared. They knew their job. Before everything went to absolute carnage and chaos, this team was in control. We knew how we wanted to play, and we're going to discuss what the play style and the tactics actually were. And everything just seemed to be clicking into place before I think I jinxed it by texting you at halftime and saying, is this the Monterrey that we're afraid of? I think in hindsight, with Vision 2020, this team was good enough to beat Monterrey at home without Messi. Maybe a big claim to make after the 2-1 loss, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it felt like certainly there was a better result there to be had. And we'll talk more about that as this episode goes on, because I think both of us have different opinions on what we saw from Monterrey in that game. Let's get straight into it. I thought that Monterrey was going to be a little bit more defensive and let Miami have the ball and try and break out on the counter. And that's not what we saw from them. They controlled the ball, and it seemed like Miami gave them that opportunity to do that. But they came on the road clearly very confident in themselves to take care of this Inter Miami team, especially an Inter Miami team without Lionel Messi. And they dominated possession, but they didn't really create a lot of chances. Our team defensive structure was really good, and we'll talk about that later. But everything seemed to be going our way and according to plan. And we finally get the breakthrough in the 18th minute. Julian Gressel on a corner. He gets the corner by saving a ball that's going out of bounds and just sort of flicking it up towards the keeper. And the keeper has to put it out of bounds. And then on the ensuing corner, he puts it in. Toto Aviles in the box gets a foot on it. Inter Miami goes up 1-0 in the 18th minute.
Yeah, I think tactically speaking, both of us didn't expect it to play out the way it did. I thought we would have a lot more possession. I think the possession stats were 58-42 overall in favor of Monterrey, which was really surprising. But I think that was the tactical setup, and that's how we intended it to be before the red card. We'll get into it a bit more, but I just want to point out Julian Gressel here, because I think he's slowly racking up those assists every single game and having a say in all our goals in some way or another. So I think a big shout out to him, because I think he's slowly and steadily building into the player that we wanted him to be and the creative outlet that we expect him to be. So good start to the game. Interesting first half, but I thought we could have got a little bit more out of that first half itself.
Yeah, after that goal, it did feel like Inter Miami was now in the game. Those first 10 minutes, Monterrey really stood on the ball, and even though they didn't create a ton of chances, they were the team in control of what was happening in the game. But Inter Miami stood tall, and they felt like after that goal, they started to build some confidence and momentum. They got forward a couple times. They created a few, maybe not half chances, but moments that could have led to half chances. we were probably really upset that sad that we didn't have a really speedy guy in the front line that could have gone past the defense, because both Suarez and Julian Gressel had opportunities where they got behind the defense by making good runs, but weren't quite quick enough to turn those into real chances. The only other real moment I wanted to talk about in the first half was, or at least wanted to point out, was Robert Taylor coming off with an injury in the 37th minute. Leo Alfonso came on. Heartbreaking because we already have a huge injury list, but I actually did think that made a relatively big difference in the game. Leo Alfonso came in and was admirable and actually, I thought, played well for the last 8 minutes of the first half, had some opportunities, dribbled the ball, had a lot of energy, made runs in behind, but he's not quite as dangerous in the final third, or at least as a goal option, as Robert Taylor, at least he hasn't proven to be. So I thought it was worth noting that we lost one of our biggest outlets and of the front three, the guy who's most dangerous in getting in behind and making those runs. Anything else from that first half that really stood out to you?
I was going to mention something which now is slipping my mind, but just on Leo Alfonso, I agree with you. Again, not the best time to send him in to the deep end. And we've talked about setting players up for success, especially young players up for success. But I think he comes out of this performance feeling good about it. I think for the time that he was on the pitch, he did really well. 8 minutes in that first half, I think he came in at the right time when Inter Miami was still on top. And overall, I think the way we were set up to play defensively sound and then try and get them on the counter was really working for us in that first half. The only issue I had was that I think we were slightly impatient and wasteful in our final third and in moving the ball from the midfield to the forward areas. And that sort of fell apart a little bit more once Robert Taylor went off injured.
Yeah, it felt like the game plan, and as we talk about the second half, most of it's just going to be after the red card when all of these dynamics change. But it felt like the game plan was for Luis Suarez to come back, hold the ball up, and then be a creative playmaker for the guys getting ahead of him. And Julian Gressel, not a goal threat. Leo Alfonso, not a goal threat. David Ruiz, Diego Gomez, right? These aren't big goal scorers. So it felt like we had some good ideas, but we didn't have the players that could really execute. And that's why I wanted to point out the Leo Alfonso thing, because Robert Taylor has goals in him and Leo Alfonso, we haven't seen that yet. So it actually, to me, that was a big loss when we went from Taylor to Alfonso. We're going to talk about the substitutes in the second half and, you know, what happened after David Ruiz gets the red card. But I don't know if we're going to go back to this. I thought Tata had to make this sub. I didn't think there was anyone else that could play that role. And the defensive structure was so solid and good and working exactly as you wanted it to, that you had to keep the structure of the team. And Leo Alfonso is the only player on the roster, or at least on the bench that game, that could have done that. So
do you think it may have been worth having Campana on instead of Alfonso and maybe changing it to a 4-4-2 or some other sort of a formation?
Not at that point in the game, because the structure was really working. It was really working.
Yeah,
and I agree. Not only was it working, it was you were growing in confidence. It wasn't like you were just, you know, easing into the game. You were getting better as the game was going on. So I thought keeping the structure made perfect sense, and Alfonso was the only player that could do that. Going into the second half, Inter Miami kept some of that momentum for the first few minutes, and Monterrey made an immediate change. They made a sub at halftime, and then in the 57th minute, they brought in two players, Jordi Cortizo and Herman Bederami, that I felt changed the game. I know that most of this discussion is going to be about Theo Gomez's red card and what happened after, but I actually felt like the tide of the game changed with those two substitutes in the 57th minute. They are both attacking players. What Monterrey did was they took this lineup that they had that they felt wasn't working. They had this low block or this tight block that Inter Miami was playing. They couldn't break it down. They put on two attacking players to try and break us down. And it felt like from that point, they really started to dominate possession.
Yeah, just to clarify, it was David Ruiz who got the red card, Diego Gomez. You said
apologies.
Diego Gomez.
My apologies.
No, but to that point, I completely agree with you. I think Monterrey sort of realized that their game plan was not working. because they were having to play a lot more on the ball than they expected to, and they needed to change a few things. And I think the second half, I thought Monterrey was definitely a lot more dangerous, especially after the their press was a little bit more. Did I cut out?
Yeah, just for a second. You're good though.
Yeah, their press was a lot more potent, and they were definitely. I think they played more in the second half as they're going to play at home in Mexico. And I completely agree with you. The subs that Monterrey brought on changed their way of playing and trying to unlock defenses rather than get us on the counter, which wasn't obviously working in their favor.
Yeah, it felt to me like they were being very aggressive. They were only losing 1-0. And if this game had ended 1-0, they might still be the favorite to get the win going home to Monterrey. And that wasn't good enough for them. It felt like they were being very aggressive. Like I said, they made an adjustment at halftime. They bring in two players in the 57th minute to change their lineup to be more attacking. Fernando Ortiz felt like he had to go for the win here. And he did. Obviously, we'll never know if it would have paid off if the next thing didn't happen. And that brings us to the 65th minute where David Ruiz gets his second yellow. Change the game as it would be expected to.
Yeah, I'm going to try and not curse here, but that was absolutely, absolutely stupid. So brain dead from David Ruiz to do that in the way that he did. He was already on a yellow card. And it wasn't even like a crunching tackle where you take the other player out. You just slap him across the face. And the referee is standing right there. He is literally 10 meters away from you. You're not getting away from that. I think that was the right decision. There was definitely a yellow card there. And it was just poor, poor, inexperienced play from David Ruiz all around. And especially when your team is under the cosh and they need you to dig down and hunker and concentrate and be resilient, I would say that was the one single point in the game that completely turned it. Even if the Monterrey team was getting a little bit into the game, I still think Inter Miami had the chance to try and get them on the counter and get something more out of this and maybe even come out with a 2-0 victory, but that completely changed the game.
Yeah. David Ruiz, this was clearly a very intense game. Inter Miami hasn't played a game this intense since the last CONCACAF Champions Cup game. So you could tell this was going to be a draining game energy-wise for the guys. And when you're a young player and you are drained and you are giving it your all, you lose your mind for a moment and you do that. And you're right, deserved yellow, second yellow. He gets sent off, and it really changes everything about how to play the rest of this game. I agree with you. I think Monterrey put on two attacking players in order to try and get that goal to tie the game, but it may have left them more open going the other way, and Inter Miami couldn't try and exploit that because they didn't have the manpower, and you know they didn't have the subs to be tactically flexible, and we'll talk about that too, but it just felt like at that point we were going to have to get really lucky if we were going to get a second goal. And it was about holding on and, you know, trying to stay structurally sound defensively. But you're going against a team that is going to break through. They do it 4 minutes later. Frustrating in how it happened. It's a corner. A few guys go up for it. None of them get to it. Sergio Busquets expected one of them to touch the ball, and none of them did. And so it kind of comes right off his forehead towards Calendar. Calendar saves it, but kind of pushes it wide. And Maximiliano Mesa was right there, puts it back on goal. And there's nothing really Drake Calendar can do about that. We were so good and sound defensively, and that first goal, it still didn't earn it. But I thought we were going to lose 3-1 at this point because it felt like everything was going against us. We get the red card. They have all the possession. We don't really have any players that can counter. We don't have any speed that can take the top off if they pull too far forward. It just felt like a recipe for disaster at that point.
Yeah, the barrage of chances that Monterrey was coming at. It was inevitable. We were going to concede. I think our defensive structure completely fell apart. What was working so well in the first half just completely fell apart in the second half because we were man short. We obviously brought on Robert Saylor, but that meant that when we need to get out from the back and try and run with the ball, we no longer have that offensive outlet. And I don't know how well we were drilled to play with 10 men. I'm not sure if that's something we work on in training. But overall, I think it was coming. But the way it came was a complete comedy of errors. I'm not sure if Drake Callender could have done any better there. Sergio Busquets maybe could have put his body a little bit more in. But that's just wishful thinking at this point, isn't it? It was just a funny goal. One that I don't think... I mean, Monterrey should have scored in a better manner than conceding such an idiotic goal, basically. That's what frustrated me.
Yeah, that was the most frustrating part, is because we were still sound defensively. We were still well-structured. Ryan Saylor did come on, and he fit right into what we were doing. We switched from a 4-5-1 to a 5-3-1, but we still stayed tight defensively, very narrow, clogged up the middle. We did everything we wanted to do, and then it was on a set piece where the ball squiggles through. This guy doesn't touch it when he should have. And then it just, yeah, they scored that way. It was really frustrating. And I was really worried at this point. But even down 10 men, I felt like the team still held strong. That structure, that defensive structure that we really haven't seen at all this season, was doing what it was supposed to do. But when that red card came in the 65th minute, 67th minute by the time everything settled in, I thought, this is just too long. You know, if you get that in the 82nd minute, you feel like, okay, you can hold on for 8, 9, 10 more minutes. But 25, 30 minutes plus stoppage time, it just felt like that wasn't, that there was just no way. And it was the case where in the 89th minute is when they score the second goal. Diego Gomez, small lapse of concentration, and the ball ends up Jorge Rodriguez's feet, who puts it in the top right corner. You can't say anything about the shot. Drake Callender couldn't have done anything about that, but it's just so frustrating because Diego Gomez, who played so well, has just one small moment of lapse of concentration in a game where he put in so much mental, physical effort, and then that's what you get remembered for. It's just like heartbreaking as a fan, because you know they did everything they could, right? The staff did everything. They planned well. They had a good game plan. The players played hard. They played well. There was no, and then it just didn't go their way in the decisive moments. Tell me about that goal.
Yeah, I would say it wasn't a small lapse of concentration. It was a big lapse of concentration, because to lose the ball in that area is absolutely a death wish. Even then, we could have gotten away with it. I think the issue that we were having, obviously, was the fact that Monterrey had made such attacking substitutions. And now that we were playing with one man, they always had that one attacking outlet that was free, who had the opportunity to try and create. And the ball fell to the worst possible person in the Monterrey team, who absolutely shot that like a bullet. Couldn't have done anything about it. Again, I thought it was a goal that sort of came out of nothing in that particular moment. Yeah. Very frustrating, because if it was something that they'd created, if it was something that they'd worked really well, I would have held my hands up and been like, okay, yeah, this was absolutely fantastic. We couldn't have done anything there. But to lose out on an absolute screamer, it's such heartbreaking scenes, because as you said, the team played so well. Diego Gomez, I think, had a really, really good game up until that point. And just to, he was obviously thinking about how to get the ball out before the ball came into his feet. And it just slipped away. And then that led to Monterrey capitalizing on it. Yeah, just heartbreaking all around. Hopefully we can turn this around in the next game, but nothing more we can do.
I think you said it right there, where you're like, they didn't deserve it. They didn't earn it. It wasn't like beautiful play on their part. You know, it's a great individual moment to place that ball where he did, but both of their goals felt like just lucky ball. The ball bounced in the right spot for them. And well, it's, and sometimes you just get unlucky as a team. you know, sports has a funny way of just like happening for you or happening against you. And that's what it felt like at the end of that game. It was really frustrating because it did feel like we did almost everything right that we could have in this game. I want to change up the structure. Normally we would talk about the other team at this point and, you know, our thoughts on Monterrey and how they played and their style and everything. But I think we should save that for the end when maybe we give a few brief thoughts on what the next game could look like. So let's get to Inter Miami's tactics. They line up in a 4-5-1, and maybe we should start with the defense because we haven't seen a defense from Inter Miami this sound all season. I know they gave up 2 goals, but they were so sound. They played really tight, very little space between the lines, especially the back line and the midfield. They were very disciplined. I was really impressed. And it felt like exactly what Inter Miami needed to do to get the result they needed in this game without Lionel Messi.
I want you to give me a little bit of credit here because I said this exact same thing. In the pre-game discussion in the podcast that we did, I mentioned that the defense is going to be key here. If we can hold on and have a good structure defensively, we can translate that into offensive chances because that's the kind of game it's going to go. And that's, I think, how it played out, how Tata wanted it to play out as well. This was on paper the best defense that we can put out there. With all the injuries and everything, I think this would still be the best defense that we put out there. Credit to all four in the back line. I think they did fantastically well. Jordi Alba as well, I think he was more defensively sound here than he has been in any of the previous games. I think that was a little bit at a cost of his offensive output. But for this game and for what we needed from this game, all four of them played so well. They organized the defense really well. There were absolutely no gaps. We were winning the ball. We were intercepting and tackling in the right areas, turning the ball over. Well done to the midfield as well, because I think they contributed to that defensive structure and overall defensive soundness of this Inter Miami team. But all four in the back line, including Avilés, Nico Freire, I think I'm starting to love Wigan a little bit too much, even though he's just played 2 games. I don't want to go on a rant about how good he was, but I think he was fantastic in that game, despite the fact that we conceded 2 goals. So it's really sad for the way that we were set up and the way that we played that we still ended up on the losing side.
Yeah, just to go to your point about Wigan, that was their, that was the guy they pinpointed as the weakness on Inter Miami that they wanted to test. And so throughout that first half, they were going to that left wing for them every single time they had the ball, trying to make a play from there. And Wigan shut down everything. It was really impressive, but then he still kept it tight enough, or, you know, narrow enough that he didn't let anyone make runs in between him and the center back. He was really, really impressive. I agree. And I'm sure he'll get an award later, or at least probably. And then they go into the second half and Monterrey decides, okay, that's not working. We have to switch to the other side. So they start going after Jordi Alba. That also isn't working. They're trying to play the ball through the middle. There's just no space, no room. It was really beautiful. Like, I know this is Inter Miami and we have Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi and we want to be an offensive team that scores 3 goals a game and all this stuff. But it was like, if you're a purist, it was really fun to watch this team that we haven't seen be sound defensively do what they did. So I agree with everything you said. I agree. Chelo Wigan was, he was so good that he went from like the guy they felt they could beat and break down to the guy they were too afraid to even go after in one half. It was really, really, really cool to watch. We'll talk about the next game in a few minutes, but is this something that they can do ever again?
Into Miami? I think this is the way to play cup ties. I'm a traditionalist when it comes to football. And I think in cup ties, this is the best way to get a result over two games and over 2 legs. If you have a sound defensive structure, unless there's an absolute chaos happening against you, like it happened in this game against Inter Miami in the second half, you will come out victorious because your defense is going to allow your offense to be more productive. And as counterproductive as that sounds, I think your foundation starts from the defense. And I absolutely love the fact that Tata agreed with me in this sense, you know, without sounding egotistical here. And I love the fact that that's how you were set up to play, because against this Monterrey team that everyone has touted to be so dangerous, you would have expected them to beat us 5-0 with Inter Miami at 10 men, without Lionel Messi as well. We had, I remember how nervous you were. I remember how nervous our listeners were as well. We were sounding the death horns at that point. And the fact that we were down to 10 men and conceded two goals then was really shameful. But I think overall we should be proud. Back.
I'm going to hold my tongue for now, because we are going to talk about Monterrey in a little bit. And I think me and you will disagree on what we saw from Monterrey in that game. But we'll have that discussion in a few minutes. Let's talk about the substitutes in the second half. David Ruiz gets the first yellow card in about the 60th minute. And you would think normally this is a young player who's put in a lot of energy mentally, physically. He might, you know, he just got a yellow card. He might be a little frustrated. Maybe it's time to take him out. It didn't feel like there was anyone on the bench to take him out for. I know there was some calls to get some more substitutes, but Ryan Saylor in for Leo Afonso and then Leo Afonso coming in for Robert Taylor were the only two substitutes of the game, neither of which were planned by Tata. I think he probably would have gone with a starting 11 for the full 90. And so to me, I looked at that bench and I see Campana as a guy that I think Tata likes and trusts. I didn't see anyone else on that bench that I think Tata feels comfortable putting in this game unless he had to, which is what happened with Saylor and Afonso. But do you think that he should have done something with David Ruiz before the red card? And do you think that once the red card comes, there was a better move to try and ice the game off and get that 1-0 win, or try and go for a second goal?
We can sit here and make comments because we know how the game played out. But I think in the moment, the Ryan Saylor substitution was one that we had.
Even in retrospect, do you think there was something that he could have done that would have been better?
I think the only thing that he could have done was perhaps take off David Ruiz and bring on Lawson Sunderland, because I think David Ruiz was starting to get frustrated. He had that yellow card on him and the team was under the cosh a little bit. Monterrey was on top of at that point in game. So again, hindsight 2020.
Yeah, I'm
but
just thinking
if Yannick Bright was on that bench, that would 100% be a substitution that Tata was making, because he would have been the perfect substitution, not just to get David Ruiz off that yellow card, but also to shore up the midfield there, because we were really struggling to contain some of the pressure that Monterrey was putting at that point, especially in the midfield. So I think it was more contingent on who was available and who wasn't. But I'm not too fussed or concerned about Tata's game management here.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know you mentioned Lawson Sunderland, but the last time we saw him was against the Red Bulls, who have a nice pressure to their system. That's what their system is, and he did not handle it very well. So the idea that he was going to come in against Monterrey and be an impactful player, I think, is probably wishful thinking. And then the only other player is Leo Campana, who, once you go down to 10 men, you're not taking Luis Suarez off because he's your playmaker. And he's also, you know, as much as we like Leo Campana, Luis Suarez is still more likely to get a goal. So it just didn't feel like there was any substitutes that Tata could make off the bench, which leads me to my next point, and that you brought up with Yannick Bright, is this team was built with so much depth, just so much depth. It's, for an MLS team, really impressive. And yet here we are in the biggest game of the season, in a must-win home game in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, Continental Soccer, for the first time, against the number one ranked team in the Confederation. And we have no bench that we feel comfortable or confident with, because we have 7-8 injuries going into the game. Robert Taylor gets hurt. Yannick Bright, a surprise no-show. Benjamin Kramaski is just 4 days too late to be able to come in and make this play or make this game. Lionel Messi, obviously not available, but it just feels like we have such a deep roster. And then when we got to the right moment, we had no one that we could count on. And I agree with you. Yannick Bright would have been, I think, a better option than Lawson Sunderland in this game. Benjamin Kramaski, obviously, Tell me about how frustrating that is.
It's super frustrating, and these are variables that you can't really control, especially when your team is trying to get into the stride, get into the momentum, and get a winning run going, and you lose some of your key players off and on again. There's a lot of conversation about whether Lionel Messi is fit, whether he's not fit, whether he's available, whether he's not available. But there are so many other players around him who are also getting injured. And that really affects the structure of the team, of who's available for Tata Martino to pick, what kind of formations we can play. If, God forbid, Wigan gets injured, we're going to revert back to the 3-5-2 and then imagine what the run of games is going to look like. Robert Taylor got injured in this game. He's basically the... first choice left wing that we have.
Let's stick to this game because I felt, you know, obviously we can, yes, but I just want to think about this game because this is like the crucial moment of the season and we were found wanting. You know, I mentioned Yannick Bright, I mentioned Benjamin Kramaski, I mentioned Lionel Messi, obviously Messi, but Federico Redondo would have been really helpful in this game because then you're bringing Redondo off and you have David Ruiz to come on and make an impact off the bench. You know, a guy like Robbie Robinson could have been a nice piece to have going forward where you, I mean, again, I'm looking at this bench and there's no players that can play wide and be dangerous and can be a goal threat. You know, you're bringing on Ryan Saylor when, you know, having Sergei Kristoff and his experience would have been really nice and helpful. I'm like left so dumbfounded and sad because this game was there for the taking and we had the right plans, but the injuries, the referee who was, you know, maybe we'll talk about him in a little bit, but he was very yellow card happy. I'm not blaming him because he was consistent both ways, but just a surprise for a CONCACAF ref. And, you know, just a few lapses of judgment for half a second that cost us this game. And I'm just like so unsettled about how all of this fell apart.
Yeah, so that was the point I was coming at, that all these injuries happening around the team are the uncontrollables. We can't necessarily control how players' fitness plays out. But despite that, I think we were set up in the best possible manner to actually get something out of this game. And as you said, it's really frustrating that we had a few moments in the game that went against us. But that's the point, right? In these kind of games against the best teams, you give them one chance, you have one lapse of judgment in a game of this magnitude, and they're going to punish you for it. So regardless of how big your roster is, you have to be perfect against these teams. And we weren't perfect on this night. So
I thought Tata Martino did exactly what we needed from him. He set the team up exactly how we needed to play in this game. Any complaints from Tata or just praise for this game?
I think, again, I was really happy with the tactical plan. I think I was really happy with the way that we were set up. Maybe he could have got Campana on to try and get something offensively going. But at one point, I think when you're 10 men down, you don't want to go out. You want to limit the damage as much as you can rather than try and go and get that equalizer. So I don't blame him for it one bit. The only issue I have would be the players on the pitch could have had a better game management. Players like Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez, tell the youngsters around you to calm it down a bit and not get as hasty, especially now that you've seen in the first half we have, what, 3 yellow cards already. So you got to control your discipline a little bit. And I think that's the only thing that I would say for me was something that we could have worked on, the in-game management from the players on the field.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. And we've seen it a couple times this season where the referee is a little different than we're used to. And not that he's doing it poorly, not that he's doing a bad job. He's consistent both ways, but it's just different than we're used to. And the players don't adjust. And you saw in this game, this referee was happy to give out yellow cards and the players didn't adjust. And we've seen that multiple times this season. So, you know, whether it's guys getting not getting the foul calls they want or getting the foul calls or getting yellow cards or whatever, the team just doesn't adjust to the game. And it's not that surprising from the young players, but you don't see the veterans sort of helping them along and are oftentimes participating in it just as much as the young guys. Anything else you want to talk about in this game before we get to awards? Because I do want to save some time to talk about Monterrey in this second leg. But yeah, anything before awards?
No, I think overall, very frustrating, but we still have one game to try and make amends. Let's see how that plays out.
Okay. First award, as always, is the Miami Man of the Match. Obviously, the overall Man of the Match would go to a player on Monterrey for this game, but these are the rules. Last game, you went first in a game where it was relatively easy to do this. In the game before, I went first in a game that was relatively hard to do this. I feel like I'm getting the short end of the stick, but it is my turn for the Man of the Match, and I'm giving it to Toto Aviles. Maybe not the player that you were thinking, but he was the goal scorer, and the team played really well defensively. And I thought it was, I thought it was his best complete game of the season. He didn't turn the ball over. He was good at, you know, getting in front of shots, blocking shots. He was not letting anyone beat him in behind. He was unlike some of the other players where we did see some lapses in judgment for a few moments. He didn't have those. I thought he was really good in this game. I thought it was his best game in a while. Maybe him getting a rest in that game over the weekend really did him good, and he only played 30 minutes or so. But yeah, I really liked what I saw from Toto Aviles in this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I could have given it to anyone in that back four. I think all of them had a fantastic game together as a unit, which is saying great things. But Toto Aviles, I agree with you. I think he had a really, really good game. He was very solid defensively. He was not prone to some of the errors that we saw from him in the previous games. There were a couple of times where I thought to myself, oh, please pass the ball because you're getting pressed soon. And he made the right pass. He made the right decision. He was concentrated throughout the game. He had his head on a swivel. And I think his positioning was great. Didn't leave too many gaps. So completely agree with you. And hot take maybe, but I think he plays better alongside Nico Freire than he plays with Sergei Kristoff. I don't know why that is, but I think Nico Freire organizes Aviles in a better manner. And you see more come out from him as a player when he's next to Nico Freire, or at least that's what I think.
Interesting. I haven't noticed that yet, but I'll keep an eye on it. They are both Argentinians, so maybe there's just comfortability of, you know, how they grew up and stuff, but how they developed. Yeah, dude, I think you said it right. And I think part of the reason I gave it to Toto Aviles instead of any of the other members of the back four is because I couldn't think of a good award name for Aviles. So I figured it'd be easier to give him the Man of the Match. And with that said, let's hear the Heron That Flew North. This is your turn to give it out. This is the award that we give out for the player who did the wrong thing at the wrong time. Are you going to surprise us, or are you going to give it to the obvious player?
I want to be surprising, but I think it was too big of an error to go with a different one this time around. As you said, I think this team was pulling in one direction, and there was one heron who decided to change his course and reach for the skies when we wanted him to stay on the ground. And that's obviously David Ruiz. He had a bit of a moment of madness. I don't want to blame him too much because he's still young, but he may have just cost us this tie. Sorry.
No, it's fair. Listen, David Ruiz is a young player we both like. We think he has a really nice potential. If he is an Inter Miami player for the next 8 years or 10 years or whatever, I would be really happy with that. He's a good player, and he's only going to get better and more consistent. He does a lot of good things. He does a lot of things really well. But he's a young player, and he's going to have his inconsistencies. He's going to have his moments of frustration, and he's going to cost you some games. And you hope that they happen in games like tomorrow, where we're playing the Colorado Rapids and it's fine. Like, it's okay. And you hope it doesn't happen in the big moments. But yeah, I think this was the obvious answer. I didn't think he had I thought he was actually decent throughout the game, worked really hard, made it difficult for their midfield to get anything going centrally, and just played really structured, disciplined defense. So it's really unfortunate that this is why we have to talk about him. And listen, he's a professional, so he'll be okay. He'll have his good moments. We don't have to crucify him for it, but for this game, I think he does deserve the Heron That Flew North. No disagreement.
The only thing I'm sad about is he's not going to get a chance to redeem himself against Monterrey because he's out for that game. So Hopefully, in the next few games or over the course of the season, he can make amends for this one brain fog.
Okay, we're both going to do two individual awards each. These are not scheduled awards. We make them up oftentimes on the spot, although I did come prepared for this particular episode. I don't think
I did
Sor did,
not.
but my first award is the Achilles Award. Any guesses?
Are we sticking to the Greek theme like we did last time around, or is this more to do with the actual physiology of our body?
It is the Greek theme, but it's not related to how the last one was related.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of a player who's overall really good but has one error in his game that might have been exploited in this particular setup in this game. Is that the right way to think about this?
You're like next to the right way to think about this.
Do I want to say Diego Gomez?
It is Diego Gomez. It's not that he has a fault in his game, but he had a fault in this game. And when you think of Achilles, you think of, he was a great warrior and all this stuff, but you couldn't name a single battle or anything that he did. But the first thing that comes to mind is he has this one weakness. And when we think of Diego Gomez in this game, we're going to think about this one really negative aspect of his game, even though overall he was, really good. And I don't want to curse because I can't think of another word, but he was really good in this game. So yeah, he gets the award for having that one really bad moment that we're all going to remember. But overall, he was really solid, and I liked his performance.
Yeah, I think he's really settling well into this midfield role. At the start of the season, or at least in preseason, I was afraid that Tata might think of him as a player who's for the left wing and more in the forward-facing side in this team because of the pre-Olympics that he had and all the goals that he scored. But I think his ideal position is in the midfield, and he's slowly becoming undroppable with his performances. That position is locked in for him, and unless there's something drastic happening over the next couple of weeks in the transfer window, I don't think he's going to lose that place anytime soon. But I agree with you that, again, he's young and we need consistency from him, which we've started to see develop. But that one moment can cost the team really, really dearly, as it did in this game. And for me, this is going to be a learning curve for him, a lesson, and hopefully he can come out of it. Just take this as an experience.
Yeah, one of the things that I was really impressed in this game between both of the two young midfielders is that we had to be defensively really sound and structured. And those two like to be guys that blow people up. They like to be really tormenting in the midfield, but maybe aren't really sound and technical and always where they need to be. And they were in this game. So I really like to see that as an aspect of this game. Okay, what's your first award?
I want to do this award second, so I'm trying to think of a new award on the spot.
No, do it first because I might take your player. You might not get the chance.
Is true. Okay, I'm going to go with the Conquistador award.
Oh, God. Is this Nico Freire?
Oh, no.
Who is it?
Well, this might be a little bit of a cheating, but this Conquistador award
Tell me what
is
the award
okay.
is.
Now, it's hard to explain it without giving it away.
Okay.
So, I'm going to tell you who this award is and why I think we need to talk about this specific player. This award is for Lionel Messi because I think he is essential for this team to go to Mexico and conquer Monterrey, even though he's not Spanish, but still, he played for Barcelona. I think without him, our expedition, our adventure, and our conquest of Monterrey will not happen. He is our leader. He is our conquistador. And I think this is the next game that he needs to make himself available for by hook or by crook. Even if he's 75%, I need him on that pitch, man, because it's going to be so difficult without him. We've had questions on this team whether they can perform without Lionel Messi. On paper, I think they can, but as of now, they've shown that they cannot. So I want to hear your thoughts about what you think this team is without Messi.
Okay, you were right. You definitely could have saved that for a second. I did not expect that at all. Yeah, dude, he's Lionel Messi. Like, if we don't have Lionel Messi next week, we're not going to win. It's really that simple to me. And again, I want to spend a few minutes talking about that game and how we felt about Monterrey. But yeah, dude, he's Lionel Messi. Bring him in, and I feel a lot better. Okay, my second award. And that one came out of left field, so I have two that I kind of pick between. I'm gonna give it the Shake It, Not Stirred award.
So we're going with the James Bond theme here, I think.
Yep.
Huh. The shake it not stirred. Is
Yep.
this Julian Gressel?
It's not. It's Cello Wiegand.
Ah, you stole
Because,
my
and I guess
player.
I talked about him a little bit in. When we were talking about the game, but he was so good defensively, so sound that Monterrey went from trying to attack him to not even bothering attacking him because he was so sound and solid. And I agree with you, man. He's really good, and I really enjoy watching him play. And I'm really excited to see what he can do when he can combine with Messi. I really like this player, and he deserved an award because he had a great game.
I can go on a 15-minute rant of how much I think Marcelo Wiegand brings to this team. Let's start with his positioning. Monterrey was threatening on that right side of the pitch constantly from the start. You said it right. They were targeting that side of the field because they thought Jordi Alba would be the more robust of the defenders that they try and get past, and Wiegand would be the easier of the two. My goodness. His positioning was fantastic in terms of whether he needs to be closer to Aviles at one point, whether he needs to go up and mark on his man, when he needs to push in, when he needs to be slightly more narrow. Brilliant. I think that was really well done, especially in that first 20 minutes. And he was a big reason for why we were winning the balls and being a menace off the ball as a team. Because I think his positioning helped out Gressel really well, which helped out Aviles really well, which helped out Sergio Busquets really well. So going forward, I want to continue to see that aspect of his game and how he helps other players fix up their positioning and their setting.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I just realized I didn't explain the award. Shake It, Not Stirred, a James Bond reference, because you can put James Bond in any situation and he's going to feel comfortable and he's going to be smooth. And that's exactly what we've seen so far from Chelo Wiegand. I don't know. I mean, he's been good in both the two games, but you know, it's his debut and it's a game in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. There's a chance that he's just a big game player and he plays like this in big games, but I love that too. So I have no complaints with him. I think Inter Miami got it 100% right. And as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be a really impact player for this team.
And the second aspect of his game, which I was really surprised about, is his pace. He's pacey. There was, I think, a moment in the 13th minute where the winger for Monterrey had a complete head start on him, and he caught up. And I think that really helps him going forward and being confident enough to come back and defend. And that, I think, is the key that you can have in your fullback. So overall, very happy with his game. I'm trying to A, quell expectations, but also I'm very excited for this player. I really like him in this position, and hopefully he shows that for us this season.
No, but just to be realistic, he's been really, really good. And, you know, he doesn't have that explosive quickness that DeAndre Yedlin had, but I agree with you. Over the long run, you know, getting up and down the field, he can do it really well and just really sound technically, really structured, really sound defensively. I really like him. He's a really good player. Okay, what's your second and final award of this game award?
I'm trying to think of a name and I can't really. So I'm gonna go with, oh, this is gonna be a hard one, isn't it? I know the player that I want to give it to, but I'm struggling to figure out what I want to say. But I'm gonna go with the Nifty Ballerina Award.
The Nifty Ballerina Award. Is this going to Drake Callender?
Yeah, because I think he's come back to the levels that we've expected of him, and he was a big reason that we kept the scoreline to 2-1. We haven't spoken about this, but statistically, they had 21 shots. So that's a lot to face for a goalkeeper in this game. And as we said, as much as the defense was on point, Drake Callender was a massive, massive reason why we kept that scoreline down. And he's part of this defensive unit that we talk about. And if an opposition team bypasses the back four, Drake Callender, man, he's time and again shown that he's that nifty, quick feet goalkeeper who can make saves out of the blue and really put out some really important saves at the right points in the game. If that first goal, if he had not saved that first goal, I could have easily seen any other goalkeeper conceding it as an own goal from Sergio Busquets. So the fact that he kept it out and palmed it away, I think he did really well there. But also, I don't think any of the goals were on him. So overall, great performance. And I wanted to take the time to talk about him because we haven't spoken about how good he was.
Yeah, completely agree. He was my next award if you had taken one of my first two. Yeah, dude, he was really good in this game. He didn't have any of those like world-class, like wow saves, but he was just really solid. He made everything he needed to. Even the two goals, he put himself in a position to make a stop. And they just, you know, placed perfectly for him to not be able to make it. Yeah, dude, I think he had 8 saves. Really, really good game.
Also, his distribution in this game was really good. And that's why I wanted to go for Nifty Ballerina, because I think he found really good outlets that helped us get out of pressure in difficult situations. And I was impressed, which is not a big part of his game generally. So,
yeah, I noticed that. I thought he was really good in distribution today or on Wednesday night as well. Yeah, dude, he's really good, really solid. They don't do advanced statistics for goalkeepers in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but I think he would have graded out really well. And he may have been the man of the match. I considered him for man of the match. It was just, you know, if we win this game 1-0, I think he probably would have been my man of the match. My award name for him was the understaffed employer, because he's looking around with a help wanted sign, because if he just gets a little, little extra help, he would have a few more clean sheets this season.
Oh, Busquets, why did he have to turn his torso that way?
Let's talk about Julian Gressel for a minute. None of us gave him an award, but I feel like he deserves to be talked about. You know, we mentioned Nico Freire. We mentioned everyone else I thought deserved to be mentioned, but Julian Gressel on that right wing to start, but really more of a 4-5-1, but you know, he played both in the midfield and out on that wing. He made good runs, especially in that first half. You know, up until that red card, he was like our most dangerous player. Him and Suarez were doing good things. I thought he had a really good game.
Yeah, I thought he had a fantastic game, a quietly good game. I think he didn't necessarily make himself shine out in, you know, the way that Lionel Messi does, but he does things that are really important for this team and that can go underrated unless you're really scrutinizing his performance. He's really growing into this roster and this squad. Moving forward, he's going to be really, really important, especially against teams that are not as great as Monterrey, where we can choose to rest Lionel Messi. I am starting to become confident in his ability to create and his ability to dictate, especially in that right wing side. And as I said earlier, he's slowly racking up those assist tallies as well. I think this is his 6th of the season, I believe.
Fourth of the season.
So, yeah. And a really good ball into the box, very dangerous. I wish we had more of a offensive mindset or outlet in this game for him to become more potent threat and deliver the balls for Luis Suarez in the box. I thought he had to slightly readjust his game style as well based on the way we were set up to play this game, but he fit really well. So very well game, like very well played from him overall.
Yeah, I completely agree. I want to, you know, we tried to keep this to 1 hour and we're We're at 59 and a half minutes, but I'm going to demand another 5 minutes to talk about the second leg because our next two episodes are both going to be about this Colorado game. So how are you feeling about the second leg? Because I feel like the two of us feel very differently about this Monterrey team.
I don't think we have a chance. I'm very skeptical.
Do you feel like this Monterrey team was everything that we thought they were going in?
After the first half, yes. The first half, I was surprised because I think they were taken aback by how Inter Miami was letting go of the ball so easily on purpose. I didn't think they expected to have the ball that much in the first half. And that sort of played against them because they were set up to counterattack. They were set up to be to catch Inter Miami off on transitions, and we weren't giving them transition opportunities. So I was a little surprised by the way they played in that first half. Or I wasn't too impressed with them in the first half. I was very impressed with them in the second half. The intent that they showed to go out and win this game, the intent that they showed to switch out their game plan, I couldn't talk about one single Monterrey player because I think all of them play really well together. And I thought they could have had at least two or three goals, just how many chances they were creating. And overall, this game played out exactly how they wanted to play out. This is an away game for them. So you obviously play different in an away game than you do in a home game. And they were really good in that second half, undoubtedly. And when you're going to Monterrey, with the crowd behind them, with the intensity that they're going to bring, I don't think we have a chance, especially without Lionel Messi.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. I agree completely with you. I think anyone that at halftime thought this Monterrey team wasn't as good, or after that game thought this Monterrey team was not as good, is in for a real surprise next week. How they played for that last 25 minutes after the red card is what it's going to feel like on next Wednesday night in Monterrey. They're going to have the crowd behind them. They're going to be playing for, they're going to be going for a 2-3 goal. Like, they're going to try to win 3-0. They're going to be going for it from the get-go, and they're going to switch it up if they have to. They're going to be aggressive in their, you know, tactical changes. They are well-versed. They are well-drilled. They know each other really well. There is no weaknesses on that team. Technically, there are no, you know, every player is structurally sound. They know exactly what they need to do. I think we lucked out because I think we surprised them with our tactics going into this game. This is the thing that I think we're going to disagree on. I'm surprised we didn't disagree on that because I've seen that a lot of people were talking about how Monterrey was not as good as they thought they were.
I'll tell you why. I think I evaluate a game differently when it comes to home versus away. So for me, this Monterrey team was there for the taking in this particular game of the tie overall. Mm-hmm. I think Inter Miami could have definitely beaten them with the way that we'd set up and the way that we were playing the game. If we had things go our way, we could have beaten them at least 2-0, if not more. And then I would have said, okay, Monterrey was not that great. But the reason I also said was that, is this the Monterrey team that everyone's so afraid of? Is because of the conversation before the game where everyone was thinking that they're going to come in and absolutely play Inter Miami off the park. A home versus an away game is like completely different. For me, the Monterrey team, when you put them in their home ground, is going to be a completely different unit and a completely different team that we're going to be playing, essentially. So that's why I had that differentiation of them playing away versus them playing home.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's really important to make that distinction. They were in a different country, three time zones ahead of where they how they normally play, in a stadium they've never played in before, against a team they've never really, they don't even have any of their, teams in Mexico have played us to like really demonstrate who we are. I know we played Cruz Azul once, but Messi only played 20 minutes in that game. And they came in, they were very confident, and they felt really good about themselves. And I think Inter Miami played it perfectly tactically. I think they played it really well, and we still lost. And granted, we could have won, I agree. If the ball bounced our way, we could have won 2-0, but we didn't. And that's because they're a really good team, and they're going to be way better next week. Here's what really worries me. we can't do what we did in that game next week, because what we did so well is we played four in the back and five at the midfield level. We had a really tight lines between the back line and the midfield, and really narrow width. And we made it really hard for them to get the ball centrally. And we made it really hard for players that were out wide to do anything in terms of getting crosses in. That's not going to be possible with Lionel Messi on the pitch. So if Lionel Messi doesn't play, we might do that. And then again, you know, I would be really surprised if that on the road is going to get us the result we need. With Lionel Messi on the pitch, we can't play. We're going to have two guys up front that aren't going to be playing defense, and we're not going to be able to be that sound and that structured and that disciplined. The next game is not going to be like the game we just saw. And I think that's the most important takeaway from I want to have from this conversation. Monterrey is going to be much better. They're going to be more confident. They're going to have the lead. They're going to have seen us play before, and they're going to be more comfortable with who our players are. And the structure that we had that worked so well is going to be sort of off the table for us in this next game. We'll do a pregame show live for the hour before the game, but I don't feel confident going into that game. But I will say, having Lionel Messi changes everything. So any thoughts before we go? Any wrap up for this game? Any last thoughts on next week's game?
Yeah, two big thoughts on the point that you made. It's very interesting that you brought that up. I don't necessarily disagree with you. It almost feels ironic and comical that our game plans have sort of switched around. The game that we played against Monterrey this week, the game plan should have been the game plan that we were using against them away from home. And not having Lionel Messi away from home and having that defensive structure and trying to curtail them and be defensively sound should have been the way we should have played away. And then at home, we should have been playing free-flowing football, creating chances, trying to win with as many goals as possible. The fact that this result has gone the way it has, the fact that we're 2-1 down, I think defense is out of the window now. I think we go to Monterrey. I want to see a full-fledged attacking Hail Mary, go with five front attackers, you know, just
we don't blow have out five attackers on the roster.
I know, but the way clear. The injury list is going, we probably don't. But just, yeah, I think just take the game to them. I would have not said the same if we had actually won this game by a couple of goals, but there's nothing to lose anymore. What's the worst that could happen? So I think make it an interesting game, make it offensively fun to watch. Maybe we get a few goals here and there, but I completely agree with you. I'm not too optimistic about going to Mexico and winning this.
Yeah, and I think that point carries, my point about the defense carries to not just that next game, but every game we play, because we were really good defensively and you'd want to see that moving forward, but it's just not going to happen when Lionel Messi is playing in any game, because he's not going to do that work and Suarez isn't going to do that work. And so you don't have those nine guys really in a good, structured, nice defensive system. About this game next week, this is my final thought. This team talked a lot about winning four trophies this season, including this one. They talked about how this was the most important trophy, at least right now. If you want to be champions, go win it. It's there for you. So go do it. That's it.
Yeah,
no Lionel Messi, just go do it. And that's it.
There have been worse cases in this, or there have been bigger mountains to climb in the footballing history. There have been more difficult results that Lionel Messi's team himself has had to overcome. And I think they'll be excited to play it, not the ideal scenario to be in, but I'm sure they'll be gunning to try and rectify their mistake or slip in this week. So hopefully we see a team that's willing to win.
Yeah, if you want to be champions, go do what champions do, and that's get a result on the road that you need. Okay, guys, thank you so much for being a part of this show. We love having you. Sor, any last thoughts before we go? And then I'll wrap it up.
It's going to be a long season, so put your belts on and prepare for the roller coaster.
Okay, guys, we will be back tomorrow in the hour before kickoff to preview the Colorado Rapids game. We're expecting big, heavy rotation, so it'll be totally different conversation. Lots of players that we don't normally talk about a lot that we'll be talking about. But until then, we'll see you, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good night.